The Black Bear fire near Alberton has grown moderately over the past 24 hours. Good evening, I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Jovetic, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce gives us a look at the costs of the Rainbow Family Gathering. Flathead reporter Katrin Fye tells us about Governor Steve Bullock's Main Street Montana project. And in tonight's feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with the owners of Urban American Outdoor Television about their award-winning TV program. The Black Bear fire, about 6 miles west of Alberton, has grown moderately over the past 24 hours. Three crews and two helicopters have contained about 20% of the fire caused by lightning. The now 80-acre fire grew because of yesterday's strong winds. The fire was kept to less than 100 acres today due to less windy conditions. The main concern is firefighter safety because of the steep terrain and loose rock and scree.
And in other news from around the state, activity at the site of the Rainbow Family Gathering continues to wind down. A small team of revelers is staying behind to clean up the tract of National Forest land outside of Jackson, Montana. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce says county and state officials are tallying up the costs.
Beaverhead Deer Lodge National Forest District Ranger Russ Reby says those left from the Rainbow Family Gathering are being very cooperative in helping clean up after the week-long annual event.
We're very hopeful that the site will be rehabilitated to our satisfaction, and over the next few years we'll come back to the pre-site conditions that it was.
The Rainbow Family claims it's the largest non-organization of non-members in the world. Each year, rainbows, as they call themselves, gather in a different national forest for a celebration of peace and community. Reby says about 9,700 people were gathering on the forest land outside of Jackson during the event's peak on the 4th of July. He says that's down to about 2,000 now. Despite their disorganization, he says a cleanup council was planning to convene early this week.
We sit down with whoever we can afford the opportunity to. Typically, they call it a council. We have certain requirements in the operating plan about mounding their latrine sites and rehabilitating the trails and those types of actions.
It's the responsibility of the gathering to conduct the cleanup, so Reby says the Forest Service is not expecting restoration costs. The agency does set aside $400,000 every year to provide law enforcement for the gathering. Officials are not yet saying how much of that was spent this year or if it was more than that. On July 1st, Governor Steve Bullock issued an emergency declaration in Beaverhead County on account of the Rainbow Gathering. That allows the county to apply for state emergency relief funds. Broadwater County Commissioner Mike McGinley says easily the biggest expenses so far have been unpaid medical bills at Barrett Hospital in Dillon from homeless gatherers and those otherwise unable to pay.
The number I think was on there right yesterday was about $175,000. Was not paid by any insurance or had any billable person to go to it on that.
He says the hospital can apply for those emergency funds to recoup those costs. Outside of that, Broadwater County enacted a 2 mil emergency mill levy. That's costing taxpayers a little more than $26,000. It paid for things like overtime and law enforcement and solid waste charges. McGinley says the event did bring in a great deal of positive economic impact to the county as well, from attendees spending money at gas stations and restaurants and the like. Overall, though, he calls the experience a negative one.
If they would somehow organize, take care of the impacts that a group like that, when they hit small communities, do, I think they would be welcome.
At least this time around, county and state taxpayers don't have a choice but to pay for many of the impacts themselves. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
Affordable airfare, higher education, low wages, and quality of life are among the challenges and opportunities business leaders from across the state identify as hampering or helping economic growth. These questions of opportunity and challenges are being asked as part of Governor Steve Bullock's Main Street Montana project. Flathead reporter Katrin Fye has more from Kalispell, where some of the Flathead's issues resonate across Montana.
Quality of life here.
And create businesses. Yeah. Grow businesses.
The Main Street Montana Economic Roundtable in Kalispell is taking place amidst more than a dozen roundtables. Seated at these tables are business and industry leaders, economic development specialists, small and big businesses. The questions these tables are discussing include what economic opportunities they see for the Flathead and what challenges there are for economic growth.
airlines and ability to move people in and out of this marketplace would be huge in bringing people in.
Pam Maurer of Northwest Drywall and Building Supply sits at a table that identifies the high cost of airfare as one of the challenges to attracting people and business to the area. Infrastructure, transportation costs are recurring themes at the different tables, as are the issues of government regulations and taxes. Owner of the Garden Wall Inn Bed and Breakfast in Whitefish, Rhonda Fitzgerald, has also sat on the State Tourism Advisory Council.
Because I've seen a comparison of tax burden state to state, and we have a very low tax burden in Montana for business.
It's a rumor.
It's a perception, not a reality. So it should almost be reversing that perception of the tax burden for business.
The information generated from these conversations in Kalispell, as well as Billings, Missoula, Great Falls, Miles City, Bozeman, and Fort Belknap, are being collected as part of Governor Bullock's Main Street Montana project. Co-chair of the project, Larry Simpkins, is also the CEO of the Washington Companies. He says recurring themes include education and workforce development.
Infrastructure has been another big issue, whether it's infrastructure in roads and infrastructure in eastern Montana to broadband and technology infrastructure as well. So it's been a wide spectrum of big items as well as small items. Some of the smaller items are, you know, CDL licenses in eastern Montana take a little bit too long to get truck drivers in the seats.
Governor Bullock says it's a bottom-up economic development plan to create a blueprint for job growth in Montana.
Then the next steps from there really are to take the data and information that we've gathered from this and go to a county-by-county level, because developing a business plan for the state, really a state as large as ours, there's going to be different challenges and opportunities.
The next steps involve sorting out all the information gathered, sending out county surveys, and communicating with neighboring states to see what's working there and address issues of competitiveness. The goal is to have a blueprint put together by the first quarter of 2014. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
Renowned University of Montana music professor Esther Anglin died this past Saturday. Anglin started teaching at UM in 1969 and retired in 2005. She was a formidable force at almost everything she tried, singing opera around the world, teaching university students who wanted to be her, and continuing to teach even after a car crash took her singing voice. Until her death, she'd been living in a Missoula-assisted living center, but she didn't want anybody to feel sorry for her. In this profile recently produced by Anna Cole for the advanced audio class at the University of Montana School of Journalism, the late Esther Anglin says she just wanted to see people live a big life.
Play it for my funeral. I'd always get lumped in the throat because that's exactly it. Is there one sentence? Oh, loving God, let it be a sound that rejuvenates, that erkvika, that means to bring life to his heart. It's a long story. You want to hear it? I was not popular. I was really an ugly kid. And I was someone that did all the... I got to be salutatorian. And I got to do all the candy sales and stuff because I was organized. So we took a test in the home ex department from a teacher that I despised, who despised me too. She thought I was laughing at her all the time when she was teaching literature courses. And I wasn't. I was laughing at the course. But, you know, when you get somebody that's paranoid, they're going to be paranoid. So anyway, she let me take this test. It was administered by Betty Crocker. They were looking for the future homemakers of America. Well, I won the statewide competition. And I was probably the only girl in that class that was so unsuited for homemaking. Never got married, never had children. But that was what allowed me to come to Montana.
What good is sitting alone in your room? Come hear the music play.
By the time I had taken two voice lessons, I was singing operatic material, and it was clear that that's where my talent was. It was just obvious.
Oh,
within the year, I had gone to the auditions and was, as a junior, was singing the Mozart Requiem with the symphony orchestra in Spokane, and I won the Met auditions in Spokane and Seattle, and was offered a niche with the Metropolitan Opera, the touring program, solo contract, and I had a Fulbright to Germany. I was granted a Fulbright. So I had to decide between that and the Met contract, and the guy I was engaged to was still dealing with the aspects of his divorce. So I figured if I went to Germany for a year, he would get rid of that and come back and we'd get married. Well, he cleared it up all right. He went right back to his wife. So I stayed in Germany. When the time came, they wanted to offer me a late life contract with this choir. But I also had discovered I didn't really like singing in choirs. And I didn't want to keep myself that healthy. I mean, I've smoked like a chimney. A lot of singers do. A lot of singers still do. It's a way of dealing with nerves, performance anxiety. Some singers drink. I mean, they drink wine before each act of an opera. The only music I really don't like is country western. And it makes it sound that it's just that I cannot reproduce with any conscience. Generally, as a mezzo, you get to sing either the mother, which I'm not interested in, or the bad wife, the bad woman. In musical comedies, that I am interested in. Because bad people inevitably have more interesting things to do. But I also liked operatic stuff. And I sang Aida. I sang the big temple scene at the end.
Did you ever get married, Esther?
No.
You didn't?
No. I came close twice. Well, maybe even the third time. I had too much power, and it was too openly expressed. And at the same time, I tried in every way I knew to dumb myself down for it, to be a little woman, you know, and that's not what men want. I regret not having kids and not having a husband, mostly in my old age.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair?
And then an accident. There was a car accident in 2000. And I was in the passenger seat. We were on a dean's trip, and we were smashed into it. And I had a seatbelt injury right that way, and it crushed my spleen. So they had to do emergency surgery at St. Pat's. But it also damaged the vagus nerve. The nerve that is branched off like that. One branch goes to the heart, the other goes to the diaphragm. This branch was damaged, and my diaphragm was paralyzed. So all of a sudden, just overnight, I couldn't sing anymore. And up until then, I was pretty good. You know, I was a good singer, good mezzo. I was in the accident first, and then in November, breast cancer was diagnosed. And in a way, I hate to call myself, you know, an Old Testament-ish, but that's the question that you also examine when you get to be older and you wonder, why me? Well, why not? You know, and if it's me, how do you deal with having breast cancer and 14 operations in 1 year? And you sort of have to laugh and say, you know, whatever. I could be mokey. I could be sad. I could be bitter. But what's the point in that? I would make other people more miserable than I make myself. Teachers, especially in the arts, teachers are not just the people who couldn't make it professionally. In fact, if they were not good professionally, then they would never be good teachers. And it's a special talent, but I suddenly had to do it verbally and not demonstrate it. I couldn't demonstrate it anymore. So I developed a way of, I just had to sort of talk people through their voice lessons and describe the sensations. Like, when do you sing? What's it feel like? What does it taste like? What does your voice sound like? Is it cantaloupe or is it pecan pie? Is it rich or is it astringent? And you develop ways of describing things. And it was clear in retrospect that that's what God intended for me to do, was help people sing. And it really was sort of a benchmark, a sign that I didn't understand at the time, didn't even really understand until I thought about it, that I was meant to get people to sing. And all you have to do in life, all you really have to do in life is figure out what's important to people, what matters to them, and help them achieve it. You really have to, have a cause that really matters before you sacrifice yourself in that endeavor. But do something that you can say when you're my age. You can say, I was there and I did that. And nobody can take that away from you.
University of Montana student Anna Cole provided us her interview with Esther England. She tells us that every piece of music used in this story was either performed by Miss England or important to her. The last piece of music, You'll Never Walk Alone, was her last performance for an audience before she lost her voice.
An award-winning television episode takes a look at the U.S. Forest Service in Western Montana. The program is produced by the Kansas City-based Urban American Outdoors. Urban American Outdoor Television is owned and hosted by Wayne and Candy Hubbard and promotes an outdoors lifestyle to urban America. Wayne Hubbard describes it as the only reality sports adventure program that presents a multicultural experience. He says a large segment of his audience is often overlooked by many other outdoor sporting shows. African American, Hispanics, Asians, and women. Urban American Outdoors' recent program was a bronze winner in the 34th Annual Telly Awards Film and TV category and has been submitted for Emmy consideration. Its title asks a very simple question. What is the Forest Service?
What was really interesting is there was a big push a while back about getting people engaged. And so one of the questions that came up was, people confused the difference between the Forest Service and the Park Service. And I ended up getting a lot of questions saying, well, in the Forest Service, the parks. It kept on going, and I made a contact there in Missoula, and I said, hey, let's put together something that actually explains what the Forest Service is.
And I think you all did that very effectively as well. You went to the Nine Mile Ranger Station, right?
We did. We went to the Nine Mile Ranger Station. What was really engaging about that was, I tell everyone when I speak about this, is I feel like I step back in history. I step back and experiencing something that was put there by people. It was so amazing to realize that this had been there for years and it's still a working, viable ranch. It was amazing.
And this was shot last November, right?
Right.
It looked awfully cold, but it also looks like you and your crew did some pretty fun stuff. Tell us about it.
We went up in the mountain. problems. We actually had the ability to go to the Nine Mile Ranger District and, you know, see where they wintered the mules and the horses. But we also went up and saw some of the places where the CCC had worked. And I was personally blown away to realize that a lot of this stuff was built by the Corps. And so basically engaging the outdoors and engaging it from a perspective where I could tell about the careers and the opportunities in the Forest Service. So a lot of people said it was cold. The warmthness that I got by doing this, I never remembered the cold. It was amazing.
Oh, very nice. So the question would be, I would assume that this lifestyle is so foreign to your target audience, packing, horses, the open country, cowboys. Has it connected with an urban audience?
Well, I'll say this. I'd like to thank everyone there at the Forest Service for working with me and giving me the opportunity, specifically Bob Shinn, who kind of helped put a lot of this together. It has hit a core. A lot of people did not know the history, did not realize that the Forest Service was different than the park, and it was available to them. You know, there was a part in the show where they said, hey, this is available. If you want to come out, you can use it. And it just engaged a lot of youth, a lot of adults, and said, hey, I didn't realize that that was available. And in our audience, it has actually taken off. We've got a lot of students that are engaged in not only just coming out, but interested in jobs and opportunities. It hit a core.
And this is important because the Forest Service, it seems right now, is working to diversify its ranks. Why do you think that's important?
Well, the world is changing. We're really, truly a melting pot, and I think the Forest Service and any other service needs to mimic and look like what their communities are and what the world is. And so what makes America great is the ability that we engage all these cultures and we pull out the very best, and that's what I think the Forest Service is trying to do.
What then does the agency need to do to successfully diversify itself? What message does it need to send out there?
I think the message that they're talking about now, hey, this is available. This is an opportunity. And not only is it an opportunity, I think it's something that, you know, most kids need to be engaged in. You know, you think about right now, everything is talking about green and STEM and all this, and they're talking about the environment, and they're talking about all these issues that affect not only us, but for the next, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years. So part of working towards that, like the Forest Service is doing, it just behooves them not to go out there and say, hey, this is what we do, and there is opportunity. Not only is there opportunity recreation, but there are job opportunities.
But it's a completely different culture than to a young guy, young woman in downtown Kansas City, say, where you're based. That's a hard sell.
Actually, it's not. A lot of people think kind of that, you know, hey, this is the big city, and actually it's really not. People are really studying history. Kansas City was like one of the hot spots for going to the West. It was one of the stops. You think about Dodge City. There were a lot of cowboys, and then there's a lot of history that's tied to it. So what the easy part is, and a lot of people think it's hard, is sometimes you got to educate them. And you also have to have someone that they trust to say, hey, this is okay for you to like this. You need to look at it. Not all of them are going to go like, hey, I want to go, you know, on top of a couple of mountains. But you're going to have a few of them go like, man, that looks very interesting. And no one told me that it was available.
And Wayne, you've acted as an ambassador for Region 1.
Oh, very much so. What's been pretty interesting dealing with this show and working with this is all of the different individuals that have contacted me. And I've got contacted from rural areas. And it's one of those things where you go and you say, I did not expect for it to get that type of legs. We've had international calls talking about, I absolutely love that. And I'm like, well, how'd you see it? Where'd you go? And they're talking about opportunity. And so many people are concerned about the environment. And so for me, being able to be a catalyst or a way to say, hey, just look at this. Man, it's such a wonderful feeling.
And you and your team, you're working on two additional programs that were shot in Western Montana right now?
We are. The next part of this is we did a show dealing with research And I had the opportunity to go and see where they're studying genome and things of that nature. And we also went to the fire lab. And thinking about the different fires and all the science wrapped around it, we actually had the opportunity that we ran into the Bitterroot hotshot crew. And we did a piece about that, and then we went up into Nez Perce. And so what we want to do is we want to tell a story about not only about the jobs, but about the people. And the people that were doing the jobs, and some of these people are implants from the East Coast and the West Coast and from California. And you know, you think about, okay, she's from, what do you mean you're from Santa Barbara? It's those stories that our kids and UrbanCorps needs to hear. That's the story.
When do they air?
I'm expecting for the first show, which is dealing with research, to air next week. If it fits into the schedule, both of them will air in July. And then we'll have another airing in September. And I tell everyone, type up Urban American Outdoors and check out your listing, and you'll find us. I always tell her, we're somewhere out there.
So. I've been speaking with Wayne Hubbard, who, along with his charming wife, Candy, I had the pleasure of meeting last year in person, the owner and hosts of Urban American Outdoor Television. Wayne, always a pleasure chatting with you. Thanks so much for your time.
Have a great one.
In tonight's weather forecast for west of the Divide, tonight will be mostly clear with lows around the upper 40s. Tomorrow expect mostly clear skies with highs in the upper 80s. For central Montana, tonight calls for mostly clear skies. Lows will be in the mid-50s. Tomorrow will also be clear with highs in the upper 80s. And for southwest Montana, tonight expect mostly clear skies with lows in the 50s. Tomorrow calls for sunny skies and highs will be around 90 degrees. Now for the editorial comments of Pat Williams.
Montana is ready, able, and eager to accept the challenges put forth by President Obama in his recent speech at Georgetown University. The president announced aggressive new standards and goals for the reform and renewal of America's energy production and consumption. Montana and states throughout the Rockies now have enormous opportunities to dramatically change the way Americans produce and receive electricity. With his announcement, President Obama has begun a genuine transition. The president's energy proposals are, happily, right smack in our state's wheelhouse. His call for accepting the reality of climate change will result in significant benefits to Montana, and that includes change. But hey, we're good at that. I think of all the states in the Northern Rockies, Montana has been the most progressive at recognizing both the challenge and opportunities of tomorrow's promise. Getting on with the tasks presents genuine challenges, but Montanans and Americans fully understand that the current and future threats inherent in our changing climate require us to roll up our sleeves and get on with the job. Our state is now called upon to take a vital role in reducing carbon emissions. We can do that and profit immensely by it. We're being asked to provide cleaner coal as a necessary short-term bridge to a future powered by alternative and renewable energy, hydroelectric, solar, and wind. That challenge is right down our alley and means more jobs, dollars, and profits. Those of us living in the Mountain West will surely benefit from the careful construction and placement of alternative energy platforms, large and small. There is no doubt that the White House is adopting many ideas already proposed by a Montanan. Senator John Tester has offered proposals to create energy efficiency, renewable energy resources on public land, and help shorten the transition from our almost complete reliance on traditional forms of energy to cleaner and more efficient energy resources. Avoiding timidity and accepting this opportunity will assure each Montanan, including financial investors, a better tomorrow. Our state's long-term energy economy will be secured in a manner that creates new jobs by the many hundreds, cleans our skies, clears our lungs, and frankly, fattens our wallets. We will install more effective and efficient hydro facilities, construct hundreds of new wind turbines, and increase the use of solar panels. And don't forget, there are jobs in all of that, and there are also jobs in creating improved processes to capture and sequester carbon dioxide from coal plants. And that's a major piece of the president's cleaner coal proposal. Montanans used to call these kinds of opportunities pay dirt. Let's get on with the job. This is Pat Williams. Thanks for listening.
Pat Williams is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Jovetich. Thanks for listening. And please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.